Good morning, everybody. Welcome to everybody. It's good to see everybody here. So first of all, let me start by thanking our sponsors for today. We have two sponsorships today. First of all, the Shira has been sponsored through 2023. Anonymously, Le'ilu Nishmas Branabas Brandit and Zelig Ben Kalman. So thank you very, very much for that sponsorship. And we have a special, specific sponsorship for this week that the Shira is sponsored this week by, I hope I'm going to pronounce this right, Shloma and Michelle Choiner, is that correct? Are they here? Well, even if they're not here, I hope I pronounced it right, who live in the US and they listen to the class every week. They're now visiting Israel. I don't know if they're able to be in live in the Shira or if they're listening from somewhere else. Excuse me. But thank you very, very much for that sponsorship. Really very much appreciated. Now, as you know, I've been... could I also remind you to turn off your phones, please? As you know, I've been traveling quite a lot, but Baruch Hashem, hopefully, will no longer be away. There'll be one Wednesday later in February that I imagine I'll be away. But one of the things I'm working on a lot at the moment, and I just want to maybe give a little plug for this right now, is that in around 2 months or so, I hope to have a Sefer coming out. I've written a book about a topic which I think is extremely important to renew a fresh conversation on. I was approached by a number of former students who are now in their mid-late 30s who said there is no balanced and accessible book out there on tzniut that has a conversation which is anything other than either triggering or useless or very kind of broad and fluffy. And this is a little bit of a hot topic. Right, so I spoke about this on the Headlines podcast a couple of times, and there'll be hopefully some new podcasts coming out with different people on it, but the book is actually a very exciting project. I'm working on it feverishly at the moment. One of the reasons why I wasn't able to produce a new shiur today, we'll get to that in a second, is because I'm trying to get the drafts back. It should go to print in about 2 weeks, hopefully, and should be available just after Purim. It's a fascinating setup. Part one is 26 essays by leading, mostly women educators around the world, in America, in England, in Israel, from across a broad spectrum of Hashkafic backgrounds. We've got people from the Beis Yaakov world, from the Yeshivish world in America, from the YU world, from the OU world, from the modern Orthodox world, from the religious Zionist world, a real range of, you know, 20 or so women who never get together in one place, any other place, but I'm happy that they're doing that in the book. And then part two is about 200 or 300 pages of my own analysis and development from the sources, which again is following the Mahalik, it's following the approach of Rav Yitzchak Berkowitz, which is a completely unknown. I promise you that almost nobody who picks up this book has ever read anything remotely like it before on this topic, and I think it hopefully will be an opportunity to reset the conversation in a different way. It's been printed here. It's going to be printed here. I'll speak to the OU about that as well. We may even be able to do a book launch. I'm thinking of possibly doing a book launch, and I'll speak to the OU about that. A lot of the OU Rabbonim are on board. There's a Haskama from Rav Zvi Hirsch Weinreb, also from Rav Herschel Schechter, from Rav Rimon in Alon Shvut, from Aaron Polyansky in Baltimore. So, Baruch Hashem, this should be a cross-community project, which I think will be a big help to reset conversations in different ways. So, all of this is by way of my apology that I didn't produce a new shiur today. My wife said to me, she said to me in the car, what are you speaking on today? I said, I'm speaking on Gnevas Das. And she says, well, have you spoken about that before at the OU? I said, well, yeah, I did speak about that many years ago. She goes, well, you better tell them that you've spoken about it before, otherwise it'll be Gnevas Das. So, here we are, just
she edits
like she did it. She indexed the book.
Yeah, by the way, Rabbi Lapiansky is from
Silver Spring. From Silver Spring, excuse me. Yeah, thank you. So, with that disclaimer, I already spoke to someone before who remembered one of the stories that I told in the shiur. So, those with long memories may remember the shiur. It was about 4 years ago, but many of the people here were not in the shiur. And also, it does say very clearly in the Gemara, unless you can get up and actually give over the shiur, then you still have to listen to the shir. If there's anyone here who's willing to take my place, I'm happy to give it up. Otherwise, let's look at the sources. And let's see some of the... this is the last in the four-part series on the difficult truth and emes and sheker issues. If you remember, 3 weeks ago, we spoke about emes and sheker, the actual halachic gradations and systematization of emes and sheker. 2 weeks ago, we spoke about elu ve'elu in terms of, you know, halakha. What does it mean that both views are right? And we looked at pluralistic approaches, that everything is right. We just have to pick, not everything, but lots of things are right. We have to choose which one we pass and like. And last week we looked at a few fascinating issues. I hope you think they were interesting, which is maybe an approach which is that, no, there's only one answer, and we have to try and find it, but don't worry, we get full grades for trying, even if we miss it. And then the difficult question of what happens when they're discussing about some historical event. And we said at the end of the shiur that they're not really ever discussing a historical event. They're discussing what the text means, as opposed to what happened, which leads to the ability to say Eilu ve'Eilu. This week I want to bring you right back down to the practical realm, and talk about an interface between emes and sheker and geneva. Meaning, sometimes a person might say something which is untrue, which is not only a problem of sheker, but it's also a problem that you've stolen something from somebody else. Now, on a certain level, whenever a person tells a lie and misleads somebody, they've stolen something. They've affected their mind deeply and internally in a way which is a real problem. But sometimes when the person lies, they not only mislead someone, but then they leave the other person thinking that they owe them a favor. You did this for me. Now I realize I owe you one. And Gnevus Das is where that's not true. Actually, I'm faking it. I didn't do anything for you. You just think I'm doing something for you, and now you think you owe me one, but you don't owe me anything, and that's where the geneva comes in. I've tricked you not just in your knowledge, but what you feel you owe as well. So let's have a look at the psukim for this. Let's start with number one. Lo tignovu. That's a good place to start. Do not steal. Now, of course, it says lo tignov in the Ten Commandments as well, but that lo tignov in the Aseret Dibros is understood by Chazal to be, because of the context there, do not kidnap. Stealing money is this one here. Lo tignovu, do not steal. V'lo techachashu, v'lo techakaru, that's talking about in a court scenario, don't lie, don't deny a claim in a court, etc. Ish ba'amito, each person to their friend. Now, it's interesting, that word at the end, amit, that's usually a code word in psukim for between Jew and Jew. Some halakhas are obligatory between Jews and non-Jews, and some only between Jews and Jews. Normally, halakhas which are, or areas in life which are unethical, are prohibited with everybody. But other areas in life are perfectly ethical. For example, lending you money and charging interest is completely ethical. If I lend you my house, you pay rental. If I lend you my car, you can pay a leasing fee. And if I lend you my money, you can pay me interest. You're borrowing my money. There's no reason why you shouldn't pay me. There's nothing unethical about that. And therefore, lending on interest is permitted between Jews and non-Jews. It's a perfectly reasonable way to do business. Between Jews and Jews, that's different because Jews are family. Every Jew is your friend. Has to be. Every Jew is your family. And therefore, if my mother calls me up and says, can you lend me $1,000? And I say, Mum, come on, you're my mother. Of course, just pay me 5% compound. then that's unethical. She's my mother. You don't lend your family and charge them interest. So here, the Rishonim raise a question. Lo tignovu, do not steal. Isn't that meant to be universal? And yet it says, ish ba'amito, each to their fellow man, which sounds like it's only between Jews and Jews. And the Ritva, I didn't bring you the Ritva, but the Ritva jumps in straight away and says, no, you didn't sing it properly. When the person who's laying in shul sings the notes wrong, it's not just that they got the notes wrong, it's often that they got the punctuation wrong. Everybody knows if you punctuate a sentence in the wrong way, then it's not going to be the same thing. Just as, let's eat grandma, as opposed to let's eat grandma, are two very different statements. So here, lo tignovu, says the Ritva, et nachta. It's lo tignovu. There's a pause. And then ish ba'amito is going on the last two verbs only. And okay, I'm not getting into what does that mean in a court, why certain things are between Jews and Jews and between Jews and non-Jews, but loitig no, but we'll see right now, is a universal thing. You're not allowed to steal, full stop, because stealing is unethical, it's cheating, and therefore that is prohibited whether you're dealing with Jews or non-Jews, and we'll see that explicitly in the context of Gnevas Das. So there's a few psukim in Tanakh where people steal things which are not monetary. For example, number two, Vayignov Yaakov es leiv lavan parami. That Yaakov stole the lave, the mind of Lavan Ha'arami. He didn't tell him he was going. What does it mean to steal somebody's mind? Gnevas Ha'lev. So that was translated by the rabbis later into Gnevat Da'at, stealing someone's understanding. That's not the same as copyright. Copyright is a different thing. Copyright, we have a whole share on copyright and whether Judaism, whether Halacha has a concept of copyright or whether it just plugs into the law of the land. That's not this. This is where you're stealing somebody's understanding. So too, in number three, Vayas Avshalom Kedavah Hazeh, L'chol Yisrael, Avshalom did this to all the Jewish people, Asher Yavol L'Mishpat El HaMelech, when they come to David, his father, for judgment, Vayiganev Avshalom Et Leiv Anshei Yisrael. Avshalom stole Gneva, he stole the minds of the Jewish people. Why? Because he was really plotting a rebellion. That's what's going on here. And he's using the people coming to make contacts to build this rebellion. And he made out to people as if he was really just helping his father, but really he was plotting against his father the whole time. That's Gneva Salev. And in fact, when Chazal list different kinds of theft, they put this at the top of the list, surprisingly. Number four, Shiva Gnavim Heim. There are seven different types of Gnavim, of thieves. Now don't forget, the difference between a Ganaf and a Gazlan usually is that a Gazlan does it in your face. A Gazlan is like a robbery. You know, point the gun, give me your money, or I'll shoot. And you take the money. Gneva is where you do something, you know, sneakily. You come in at night and you don't want people to know, etc. And you well known is the idea that Gneva is worse than Gzela. Because Gzela, at least the person, is upfront about it. Like, I don't care what anyone thinks. I'm going to rob you right here. Whereas a Ganav, he doesn't worry about what HaKadosh Baruch Hu thinks, but he worries about what other people will think. And therefore, there's a sneakiness. There's a Bein Adam La'atzmo. There's an internal corruption with Geneva that is not there with Gezela. It's not just theft of property. So here, Shiva Ganavim Heim. HaRishon Sheba Ganavim. First on the list. Like Shabbat, Rishon Hula Mikre Kodesh. It's the most important. Here, HaRishon Sheba Gnavim is Gonev Das Abrias. It's someone who steals other people's das. And the example it brings is a almost trivial, but a very real social example. HaMasariv L'Chaveru La'orcha, someone who pushes someone to eat with them. The Ein B'Libo L'Kreisa, but you have no intention of inviting them. It's just a sham. You don't want to eat, you repress that. Oh, you must come for dinner. You must come for dinner. And somehow or other, every day that you suggest, oh no, I'm really sorry, that won't work out. We'll do another date. You know people like that, right? You must come for dinner. That is Gneva Das. Now, of course, eventually, you cotton on to the fact that, yeah, this is just fraud, and then that's the end of the Gneva. But all the time that you're thinking, wow, they're so hospitable, that is part of the Gneva Das. And the Rambam actually lists this as one of the mitzvot. Have a look here. Number five. The Parashat Kedoshim calls them Loitig Novel. It says, do not steal. Kvar b'yana l'mala, sheba mamana kosev v'dabit. The Pasuk is talking about money. Okay, do not steal money. V'tani b'tosefta, debava kama, shloshe ganavim heim, harisha sheba kulam, and the worst of all ganavim. He quotes this in his, don't forget, in his Sefer HaMitzvos, the Rambam only gives you the very little summary of exactly what you need to know to come away with a brief understanding of this mitzvah. And here he's describing this is the Smak, not the Rambam, I beg your pardon, Sefer HaMitzvos HaGadol. And he says that harishan sheba kulam, the first on the list of all of them, is Gonev Das Habrias. Someone who offers people gifts, and you know that they're not going to receive them. You're trying to get them to come to you to eat, and you know they're never going to come. Because Avshalom stole three different things from people. Leiv Aviv, he misled his father. Leiv Beis Din, he misled the court. The Leiv Kol Yisrael, and he misled the people. Therefore, nitku b'beshloisha shvatim. That's why Yoav threw three spears into him because of the three gnevas that he fooled the Jewish people. And it brings the pasuk there. The gnev das abrius nikra ganav. And even if you only steal people's gnevas das, if you only steal people's understanding, you're still called a ganav. And he brings the pasuk, v'yignav avshalom es levan sheyisrael. So in the smag, again, the smag, the sefer mitzvah sagadol, Rav Moshe Mikushi, who is one of the main listers of the 613 mitzvahs, he wants you to know up front that stealing somebody's knowledge is part of that mitzvah. Interestingly, the smack, who is a commentary, if you like, on the smag, one of the Balei HaTosfos as well, says in number 6, I think he was Rav Yitzchak of Korbei, I'm not 100% sure of that, Shelo lignov mamon, you're not allowed to steal, dichsev loy tignovu, v'yesh gneva acheret, there is another type of gneva, she'asru chachamim. He thinks it's a lower level, it's a drabonon level, kagoin gnevas das osa. Okay, doesn't matter whether they're Jewish or non-Jewish, as we'll see right now, it's still prohibited. So there is something of a machlokus as to whether Gnevas Das is Doraisa, whether it's Darabonon. The smag indicates it's Doraisa, the smag indicates it's maybe Darabonon. How does the Shulchan Aruch Paskin? Number 7. V'chein kol mirma sheba olam. Anytime you sneakily trick somebody, asura b'mekach omemka, you're never allowed to do that in business. Avilu enochri. Doesn't matter whether they're Jews or non-Jews. Cheating people is halachically prohibited because it's immoral. Kagon, give you an example. If there is a defect in the thing you're selling, we'll give you all sorts of examples soon. Tarek lahodiyo, lokech, you have to inform the purchaser. Afal pishehu nachri, doesn't matter if they're Jewish or not Jewish. Shahari boy matayu, because you're fooling them. V'gonev daso, you're stealing their understanding. Im einu modi, if you don't let them know. You may also be stealing their money. Because if you're selling them something which is low grade and they're paying top dollar, then obviously that's theft on many levels. That's as if you're stealing money. You're stealing money from him. That's a Torah prohibition. We've explained below. Even if there's no monetary loss involved, you're not causing them any loss. Asur medivrei sofrim, that's what's asur medivrei sofrim. Could go in limkol lo basan avela becheskas shchuta. We'll see that example. You're selling them treif meat, and they think it's kosher. So you'll say, well, they're not Jewish. Why would they care? They don't keep kosher. They don't need to keep kosher. We'll see. That's still gnevas das. The achlif noy das habrius. Even just to mislead people, bedvarim with just words. Afilu b'mila achas. Even with one word, shall svat chalukot of sneaky language or gnevas das or b'mashib shebemarish oisib bishvilan. Or you think you make out you're doing something for them. The ainah osir, but you're not really doing it. Asur, that's prohibited. Just like we said before, because now they think they owe you one, but they don't owe you klum, anything, because you're really just fooling them. Okay, so that's, if you like, an introduction. Let's see the parameters of it, because one of the things I find fascinating about this particular topic is that the Gemara itself gets into the nitty-gritty of where do you draw the line? Meaning, what about advertising? People have always wanted to advertise. Advertising always gives over an impression which is on some level not true. You know, I use that face cream, I'm going to look like the woman in that poster. Well, I've got news for you. Even the woman in that poster doesn't look like the woman in that poster. It's all been photoshopped. No one's ever going to look like that. So we're going to take you back. I'm sorry, I paid money. I expected to look like whoever it was, supermodel. And I don't look like that now. So, you know, no, sorry, that's advertising. Did you really think you were going to look like her? Don't be ridiculous. That's called advertising. No one really believes it. You still buy the product. Best burgers in the world. Joe's Burgers. Best burgers in the world. You eat them? Sorry, they're not the best burgers in the world. What do you expect for $10? Yeah, but you say best burgers in the world. Yeah, but come on. That's not, no, everyone knows. Where do we draw that line? Do we say everybody knows? When do we say that? And when do we say no? You're actually misleading people. So let's have a look at the sugya. Look at number 8. It starts with a Mishnah, which asks the following. Shaleich adam yerech la'ovid kochavim. You can send a leg of an animal. Sell it to a non-Jew. I'm on number 8 at the bottom of the page. Shehagid But you can only sell it to the non-Jew if it's still got the sciatic nerve in it. Because they know the Jews don't eat that. And therefore they know that it's not kosher. Because it'll be visible. You can sell it, but you have to have something visible in it, which is tells the non-Jew that it's actually not kosher. But if you sell it as chopped meat, you can't do that. Because since they're buying from a Jew, they'll expect it to be kosher. So let's have a look at the Gemara. The Gemara says in number 9, the Chulin. What's the reason you can't sell this treif meat to the non-Jew unless it's evidently treif? Now, the Gemara also plays with the idea, maybe because he might sell it onto a Jew, or he might serve it to a Jew, because he says, oh, I bought this from a from Jew, so obviously it's kosher. That's one option. But the Gemara then comes on to say, actually, there's another possibility as to why it's a problem. Mishum de ganiv leila dasi, because you're misleading them. You're not allowed to mislead anybody, doesn't matter whether they're Jewish or not Jewish. Tanya, and here's a braisa. Rabbi Meir would say, don't try and encourage. Do you mind shutting the door at the back, please? It's just a bit noisy. Sorry, Ed, if you don't mind. Don't encourage somebody to eat with you, for your day of but you know they're never going to come. Because you're just faking it. Don't try and give them gifts, for your day of makabit. You know they're not going to receive them. Because you just try and look nice. The loy, now here's an interesting example. The loy yivtach lo chavis hamachuras lechenveni, ela im kein hoidio. Don't open up a new barrel of wine that's been sold to the shop unless you tell them that it's been sold to the shop. What's going on here? So wine was never sold by the bottle in those days. It was sold by the barrel. So you're my guest. You come to me midweek Shabbos, it doesn't matter. And I say to you, you know something? Let's crack open a new barrel. Oh, a new barrel? Like, you know, opening a new barrel is a big deal. It's not just a new bottle. It's hundreds of liters of wine. For me, let's open a new barrel. Don't worry about the old one. But really, you're anyway opening this barrel because you sold this barrel to a shop down the road. They're coming to pick it up in 2 hours. You're opening it anyway. But you know something? I'm opening it for you. Now you feel good. I feel good. We all feel good. But I'm not really opening it for you. So you have to tell them, you know, let's have from this new barrel. And you can say it in a nice way. A nusach, you know, min hashamayim that you're here. I'm opening it anyway. But why shouldn't we enjoy a little bit first together? Then nobody's fooling anybody. But if you tell him, let's open the barrel, Rashi says, you're stealing from their mind. Now then when you come to their house, they think that they owe you something. Because, wow, when I went to him, they opened a new barrel. And now he's coming to me, I better do something likewise.
Yes. Sold the barrel of wine.
Yes. Okay, that's another question. Meaning, you know, maybe I sold it and I said to them, you know, it's almost full, I'm just going to take a couple of glasses, whatever. You're right, you'd have to tell them as well. Maybe he sold part of it. Either way, it's being opened is the point. So the story that I mentioned, that someone mentioned to me before, this happened to one of my rabbonim in London. He went to someone for a meeting, and the guy said, can I give you a whiskey, Rabbi? And he said, yeah, sure, you know, I'm not a big whiskey drinker, but whatever, I'll have a l'chaim, why not? So he opens a cupboard and he gets out a bottle of very expensive, you know, the stuff in the airport, $500-$600 a bottle, and he pulls it down, he starts pouring it. So the Rav said to him, no, really, you're wasting now on me, honestly, give me some stuff from the less exclusive range. So he says to him, oh, Rabbi, he said, I've been meaning to ask you a shaila about this. Because actually somebody gave me this bottle of wine years ago. And it was finished years ago. And I just top it up with cheap whiskey from the supermarket. And I serve it to people. And everybody, you know, most people don't really have a clue. You know, they'll make the right noises. They'll, oh, psh, like, whoa, wow, what a... You know, it's really from the supermarket. And I've been meaning to ask a shaila about this. And the Rav's thinking, oh my goodness, you do have a shaila. You're over on Gnevas Das. It's a doraisa potentially every time you're pouring this wine out. But that wasn't his shaila. He didn't even think of that. His shaila was, do I have to toivel the bottle every time I refill it with the whiskey? Now, that's a good shaila. That's a good shaila. But it's not the shaila that he should be asking. Well, you see, that's not how it works. Because the toibling, it's like the classic, you know, joke, you know, somebody has their milk in the fridge and people keep taking it. So he says, please don't take my milk. They still take it. He writes his name. This is my milk. They still take it in the office. He writes on this. It is Geneva Midoraisa to take this milk. They still take it. So then he has an Einfall. This milk is not Chalav Yisrael. Nobody's going to touch it. Okay, we know that's how the world sometimes works. It's the same idea. So if you can't make out that you're doing something for them when you're not doing it. By the way, does he have to toggle the bottle? He's using it now as a glass bottle. So that's not today's shiur. We had a whole shiur on mikveh issues a long time ago. But actually, if you remember, there's a tshuva of Rav Moshe Feinstein. Rav Moshe Feinstein says you have to toivel a kli if it's made by a non-Jew, not if it's made by a Jew. So who made the whiskey bottle? A non-Jew somewhere in the world, that's for sure. It wasn't made by a Jew, says Rav Moshe. But one second. When you buy something in a bottle or a jar, you're not buying a bottle and whiskey. When I go to a whiskey shop and I buy whiskey for whatever it is, I'm buying whiskey. It happens to come in a glass bottle, but I'm not relating to that bottle. Oh, it's $55 for the whiskey and $1 for the bottle. I suppose if they have a picadon, maybe there's like something to be, but I don't think they do that on whiskey. So you're buying whiskey, says Rav Moshe, therefore it doesn't have the status of a kli. You don't relate to it as a kli. It's just there to keep the whiskey in. The minute you say, I'm going to now use that glass bottle as a kli for something else, it's a Jewish kli, because you made it into a kli. And now it's a kli made by a Jew, and therefore you don't need to toivel it. Very, very very logical, very sensible, and not everyone agrees with that, but that's Rav Moshe's hetzer to reuse. And we don't have it with whiskey so much, you have it with jam jars and things. You know, you want to reuse them, you want to use it to make something else. So that's Rav Moshe's hetzer. If you want to toivel them, gizon tahed, you can toivel them. Not sure you can make a brocha, since it's a shaila as to whether you need to toivel them or not, and usually you'd make a brocha on glass. Anyway, back to Gedeva Stas. Third line down. V'lo yamala, don't say to him, why don't you take some of this oil, rub it on your hand, and it's really empty. You know he's going to say no, but you look as though you're offering him, and it's not really there. The im bishvil kvaido muta. And that's very interesting. There's a heter. But if the reason you're doing it is not to mislead them, to make them think that they owe you one, but because you would like to honor them, for example, you know, important, you're running a dinner, there's a guest of honor, and they're sitting on the top table. And then some other very chosh of a person walks into the dinner, you didn't even know they were coming. And you say to them, would you like to sit on the top table? And you're praying that they'll say no, because it's going to take cause of machloikas, and these people will say, well, I thought I was sitting on the top table, but you would like to them, you would offer them the top table. It's not because you're making out that you think they're important, but you don't. That you really think they are, but you're hoping that they won't do it, you're offering it for their covered, that's okay, he says. That's fine, because you're not misleading anybody, and if they said yes, you'd be happy to have them on the top table, you'd just rather not right now. So the Gemara says, Eini, v'halo ula ikla lebe Rav Yehuda. Didn't Ula go to Rav Yehuda's house? Patach lo chavio samuchores lechemeni. They opened up these new barrels that were being sold to the shop. Says the Gemara, no, odia, he told him, he let him know, etc. And this comes up in all sorts of scenarios. You know, can you pop into a wedding when the people are going to think that you made a big effort to go there? Or a shiva. I had this situation many years ago, I'm sure you have as well. There was a shiva in, you know, quite a long way away in Israel. It was on a Friday morning. And I didn't really know this person well enough. I would never have usually on a short Shabbos, Erev Shabbos, gone all the way to the other side of Israel and come all the way back to go to a shiva. For them particularly, because I didn't really know them very well. But I was there anyway. I was there doing something else, dropping something else off. I thought, well, if I'm there anyway, of course I go to the shiva. So of course, when you go to the shiva, they go, oh, it's so nice of you to drive all the way from Alon Shvut to the shiva. And of course you didn't. So what do you do? So I didn't want to make a scene at the shiva. So I told him after the shiva, I said, you know, I was in the area anyway. Maybe I should have said something at the shiva. This comes up at a wedding as well. You know, I get invited to lots of weddings, which are not really personal invitations. You know, the invitation goes up on the board. Anyone who'd like to come is welcome to come. And the wedding's in Bnei Brak. And, you know, Baruch Hashem, it's good to go to weddings. But I'm not going to be able to go to every wedding. But if I'm in Bnei Brak anyway and I go there, they'll think, oh, wow, he came to the wedding. Psh, amazing. But I didn't really go to the wedding. So you have to find some way of communicating that you're happy to be there. And, you know, you want to be there, but you didn't go specially. Without upsetting them. You have to be a chacham in this life. On the other hand, let's say you get invited to a wedding in Perth, Australia. Okay? And you don't really know them very well. But you happen to be on vacation in Perth. So you go to the wedding. And he says, whoa, I can't believe you spent $8,000 on a ticket. And you hardly even know me. And you came all the way from America to Perth, Australia just to come to my wedding. Like, sweet, but completely nonsense. Like, you would think that? You really think that? Do you have to put them right when they think something so outrageously ridiculous? I suppose there you could say, well, I was on vacation anyway, and like they're not really going to get upset. But we'll talk about that question as we go on. Let's pick it up now. Ibois Eimer. The Ibois Eimer on the 4th, 5th line down. But alternatively, Shani Ula, the Chavle Rabbi Yehuda, the Balav Hachi Pechusi B'Niftachle. And again, the same idea. Even if he didn't tell him, he's the kind of person for whom he would have opened a new barrel. And therefore, he's not misleading him. And the fact that it happened to be sold to the shop down the road was irrelevant because he would have opened a barrel for him. That's fine. Tana Rabbanu. Lo yelich adon lebeis ha'avel. Don't go to a shiva house. U'biyad alugin hamash kashkeshis. And there's a bottle, there's a wine, but it's actually empty. Well, you look as though you're going to give them a bottle of wine. Velo miladu mayim. You certainly can't fill it with water. It looks like it's wine. Shematei, because you're cheating them. V'inyesham chaveir mutzah. But again, if you're doing it for their covered, then again, what's going on? They used to take, people now still do, take food to the shiva. So if you're taking wine, the Avelim used to like to drink wine, maybe they still do. If you take a bottle of wine, you're doing it to show that you're mechabed them, but there's actually no wine in it. If you really are misleading them, then that's awesome. But if you're doing it because you would do it anyway, you just, you know, picked up the wrong bottle of wine, let's say, and it's picked up an empty one, you walk in, you think, you know, that's fine because you're not misleading them, you would have given them a wine. Last three lines. Tana Rabbanu. Lo yimkor ad lechaveiro sandal. Now we're getting into actual defects in goods. Don't sell someone a sandal, shel mesa, made from a dead animal. Well, I don't think you'd want any other sandal, honestly, than a one made from a dead animal. But here's the key. Bichlal shel chaya shruta. By advertising, you're telling him that it was a chaya shruta. It was a healthy live animal, which was shechted for leather. But really, it wasn't a chaya shruta. It was a like almost dead animal on its last legs, and you said, you know something, let's just kill it quick before it dies anyway, and it's probably diseased. Niplay based environment, there are two problems. Aleph Mimnishu would say, one, number one, you're misleading them. They think they're buying high quality leather, but they're really buying cheap leather from an old, scraggy old cow, okay? The Echem Ibn Eish HaSakana, and who knows whether it's dangerous, you know? Maybe the leather's infected, something's wrong with it, you can't do that. Don't sell your friend a barrel of, or send him a barrel of wine. The Shemen Tzap Al Pia, but when they open it, it's got oil on the top. Because they think you've sent them oil. The oil's floating on the top. Really, the oil is only a centimeter deep, and it's wine underneath, which is much less valuable. Umaisa. Once happened, someone once sent a barrel of wine to their friend, and it was oil on the top, and they thought it was oil. And he invited loads of guests on the assumption that there was oil, and he didn't really have any oil. And they all came, and then when he was serving the oil, he found there was no oil. And he committed suicide from embarrassment. Now, obviously, this is an extreme case, okay? A bit like the story of the person who was saying, Al Naras Bavel, and he picked up a knife on the table and he, like, stabbed himself out of anxiety. You never know whether people are a bit unhinged. It's true in life, no? And I'm not suggesting that that's likely to happen, but this person tricked another person, and it had unintended but very tragic consequences. And therefore it's saying, obviously the guy's not a murderer, but nevertheless, look what can happen when you mislead people. You never know what chain of events it's going to set off. Okay, fine. So where do we draw these lines? For example, I used to have an old car that I sold. I bought it second, third hand. And I sold it a few years later before we came to live in Israel. And there was all sorts of things going wrong with it. There were squeaks and there were flickers and the seatbelt used to kind of, you know, get stuck a little bit. You know, these old cars and you kind of work around all the problems. But then I'm selling it. So I went to one of the dayanim on the Beis Din in London. And I says, do I really need to make a list of every single thing that's wrong with this car? It's a list as long as your arm. In a minute, I'll tell you what the answer was. But that's a shaila. Can I just say, my father, many years ago, when I was a kid, I remember when this happened, he bought a new car for my mother as a treat, as a surprise. And when she came home, it was a Mini, back in the old days when Minis were cheap and small rather than fancy like they are now. And he bought this Mini for my mother, and they got in the car. My mother was very excited. And they lifted up the mat under the accelerator pedal, and there was a hole in the car. There was nothing there. It was just road underneath, you know. No one had thought to lift up the mat to check that there was any, you know, floor underneath. And he was just, remember that, it was very, so obviously that's the kind of thing you have to tell somebody. But I think the idea maybe was to pedal, yes, with your feet. Okay. And minis are so low to the ground, you could almost break that way with your feet. Not suggesting it, really. Okay, fine. So, look, so where are we drawing these lines? And this is why I find the Gemara number 11 absolutely fascinating. Because it actually gets into the detail of how you word an advertising sign. And you would have thought, well, really, Chazal are interested in that? The answer is absolutely they are. Heichen machrizin. So how are you going to advertise? So what's going on here? Here is a butcher, a Jewish kosher butcher, and every now and then it turns out that an animal is treif, meaning they shecht an animal and they open it up. Oh, it's a treifer. So we can't sell it to our Jewish customers. We'll sell it to non-Jewish customers. Why not? They don't care. They can buy a treif meat. So how do you advertise if you're a kosher butcher that you have a special deal on for non-Jewish people? How are you going to do that in a way which is not going to upset people and not going to mislead people? So says the Gemara, Amar Rabbi Yitzchak Bar Yosef. So first of all, Rabbi Yitzchak Bar Yosef says, this is what you put on the sign. Nafal, number 11. Nafal Bisra Lebnei Chaya. Meat on sale, meat available for the Chayalim. The Chayalim were the non-Jewish soldiers. This is in Bavel, right? It's not Israeli soldiers. So there's a special deal for non-Jewish people this week. Okay, fine. That's what you put on your sign. Says the Gemara, excuse me, the Lema, shouldn't you have to say, Nafal treifasa libnei chayla? Don't you have to say that the meat's treif? What if they buy it and they think it's kosher? Why would it be gnevas das for a non-Jew to buy meat thinking it was kosher, but it turns out to be treif? Right? Because they think kosher? Kosher means healthy, kosher means high quality. You know, these Jews, they're not going to just eat anything. Kosher meat is like, what? It's blessed by the number of times where people, when I was a lawyer and I used to, you know, order my special airline meal, and there was a fancy service in London called Homolis, and they used to match everything. They'd match the cutlery, they'd match the crockery, they'd match everything, they'd bring you a meal, etc., etc. And apart from all of the things that could go wrong, that did go wrong, like, you know, the non-Jewish guy opens it up and then sticks in the treif thing to kind of, oh, you know. But a number of times people would come up, and I was in a conference in the morning, they'd whisper in my, excuse me, sir, your meal's here if you'd like to come and bless it. So, like, many times. Very nice, you know. Holy food for the Jews. So, they want to know it's kosher. So, don't we have to say, this meat's treif? Says the end of the first line, what are you talking about? Lo zavni. No one's going to buy it. You're going to write on an advertisement, treif? What, you got no seichel? You've got to talk it up. You can't talk it down. Says the Gemara, the Hakimatayanu, but then you'll be misleading people. Is the Gemara kind of arguing with itself? You know, what are you in the right? How can you mislead them? Says the Gemara, no. Inhu kematay v'nafshehu. They're only fooling themselves. That's interesting. Not my responsibility. Their problem. If they think it's kosher, their problem. No gnevas das. Okay? Like what? Ki hadamar zutra breda Rav Nachman. Like the case of Rav Zutra, Rav Nachman's son. He was going, let's say, as a guest speaker, as a visiting rabbi, to a certain town. And Rav Safra were coming in the other way. Rav and Rav Safra coming the other way. Pagu hadani, and they met in the middle. Just randomly. They weren't planning to meet. Now, who Savar? He thought, Mazutra thought, La'apei hu dekaasu, that they were coming to meet him. Oh, Choshev Eskol in residence, Rabbi, we came out to meet you, bring you to the town, thank you for coming, such an honor. And Amalahu, so then he starts talking to them and saying to them, Lamalahun Rabban Litrach, why did you have to go to so much trouble? Vasukuli Hai, you've done so much, it's so nice. And of course, now they've got a big dilemma, which is, he is a Choshev a guy, but they didn't come to meet him. What are you going to say? It's a bit like I sometimes give the case, you invite friends for dinner, and everyone's having a good time. You bring out dessert, a chocolate cake, you bring it out of the kitchen, and one of your friends says, oh, I don't believe it. Such a good friend. You remembered it's my birthday. You had no clue. It was her birthday. I mean, if it's your wife, then that is a problem. Okay? Okay? And it can happen. But if it's a friend, what do you do? What do you do? Do you say, well, you know, if I would have made your birthday cake, I just didn't know it was your birthday, but now let's have a, you know, eat it. Do you start like, happy birthday? She thinks she remembered her birthday. And now from now on, she's been thinking, oh, well, she remembers my birthday. Now it's not so hard, you know, you're on Facebook, You see when it's everybody's birthdays. I sometimes wonder, how do these people know it's my birthday? You get random messages. And it's only older people that are on Facebook anyway. No one under the age of 40 has even heard of Facebook. So it's good for birthdays. So what are they going to do? So Amalei Rav Safra. Rav Safra was a very straight shooter. There's the famous story of Rav Safra. He's the one that was sitting in the shop, and a non-Jew came in and offered him money for a certain merchandise, and he was saying the Shema. So he didn't answer. So the non-Jew thinks, well, he's playing the haggling game. Okay, he goes up a bit, and up a bit, and up a bit, and eventually gives him a high, and eventually finishes saying the Shema, and he says to him, I'm only going to accept the first price that you offered, because I wasn't trying to get a high price. In my mind, I felt that that was good enough, and the fact that I was saying, I was praying, and that's why I didn't answer. Now, he didn't have to do that. You know, in monetary matters, dvarim shebelev einam dvarim, what's going on in your mind is irrelevant. You know, the guy at the end of the day offered a higher price. He could have taken the higher price, but he wouldn't. He's a very straight shooter. So he said to him, Amalei Rav Safra, an loy havi adin and deka asimar. We did not know you were coming. I havi adinan, if we had known you were coming, tvei havetarchinan, of course we would have come to meet you. But that's not what's happening today. We didn't come to meet you. So Marzutra feels a bit silly, because he's just been like, oh, you shouldn't have bothered. Well, we didn't bother, actually. He says, Amalei Rava says to us, Rav Safra, my time at Amat Lehachi, did you really have to say that? I mean, you have to tell the truth all the time. Couldn't you just have let it flow? That's Kalishte Ledaite. It made him feel like embarrassed. He's like, he's upset. So Amalei Rav Safra says, one second, we would have been fooling him. It's Gnevas Das. You can't do that to people. He thinks we came to meet him. Says Rava back. No. Iu kamatai nafshe. He was only fooling himself. What? Only fooling himself. It's not your problem. Let him think that we came to meet him. Okay, so where's this line? When it comes to the barrel of wine, I have to tell them. If I open a barrel of wine, they'll think I did it for them. I have to tell them. But when it comes to the meat in the butcher, I don't have to tell them. They think it's kosher, their problem. Mazutra thinks we came to meet him, his problem. Where is this line being drawn? So what you see here is a very interesting machlokes between Rashi and Tosfos. Look in Rashi first in number 12, excuse me. Look in Rashi number 12. Inukim atayin afshehu. They were only fooling themselves. This is on the case of the people buying the meat. The lime is shyly. They never asked, e trefa, e kashera. Is this treif or is this kosher? You never said anything. The Haidi Ketanila Ale and the case above, when you open the barrel of wine, with the sandal, is that you're selling it, when people buy these sandals, you're representing that they're made from the normal leather. And so too, when you open up a barrel, when it's really been sold, says Rashi, the Oimelo, it's when you said to him, Bishvilcha ani potcham. I'm opening this for you in your honor. The Vada Gonevadas, that's when it's Gnevastas. But in a case where someone just assumes, like Marzutra, Iukumatai Navshei, the next line of Rashi, Achreshe anu loy amarnu. We didn't say, Lo amarnu loy likratcha yatsanu, that we came to meet you. Says Rashi, it all depends on what you say. If you say something and it's not true, then that's called Gnevas Das. But if you just keep shtum and you don't say anything and other people come to their own conclusions, then that's okay. I never said anything. I never told him this. They thought it was a birthday cake. Gesundheit, it's a birthday cake. You know, what's the problem? I never said I made you a birthday cake. Okay? Obviously to say that is completely wrong. Tosfos says, no, that's not good enough. And this is where you might get into an interesting legal distinction. Look at number 13. Says Tosfos, it's not, I don't agree with Rashi that it depends on whether you said or you didn't say. Lekach nira, it seems to me, he says, number 13, the hasam, there in the case of the barrel of wine, bestam, it was stam. What does stam mean? No one said anything. He just said, let's open a barrel of wine. I didn't say for you. He said, let's open a barrel of wine. The osa, but it's still osa. I don't think it matters what you say, says Tosfos. Mishum, she'ein la'oreach la'asuke adaiti. Because a guest, I'm going to say something that's more English law oriented. It's not reasonable for a guest to assume the mechuras lechemvani, that this is actually sold to a shop. Meaning, if I'm with someone in the house and I open a new barrel of wine, it's reasonable for me as a guest to think you're doing it for me. Well, I'm going to think you're doing it for some other thing. Why would I think that? If I go to someone's house and they open a new bottle of wine, and it turns out it's for someone's coming in half an hour, well, would I think that? Why would I think that? I'm with somebody, you open a bottle of wine, I assume you're opening it for us. But here in the case of the buyers, iboy lehul asuk yadaisu, they should have realized, they should have thought, de trefahi. What, really? Kosher butcher? Special deal for non-Jews? What, you think it's kosher? What planet were you born on? Of course, if the Jewish butcher says special deal for non-Jews, of course it's treif. Anyone would know that. So if they think it's kosher, they're just misleading themselves. And so too, Umar Zutra says to Tosfos, he boy leil asuki l'adaisei, he should have realized, shaloi likratoi hayubayim. What, everyone you meet in the street, you bump into, you think is coming specially to greet you? Who thinks like that? You meet people in the street, they're coming to see you? You meet someone in the street, you assume they're doing their own thing. They're out shopping or they're out doing something else. You don't think that they're here to meet you. So Tosfos says, and this is important because this is the halacha. Look for a second to number 16. The halacha is, it's not about what you say, it's about the impression that you give. Number 16. Shulchan Aruch. You're not allowed to fool people, to mislead them. If there is a flaw in what you're selling, you have to tell the buyer. It doesn't matter if they're Jews or non-Jews. Don't sell them meat that it looks kosher, if they think it's kosher when it's not kosher. Just to mislead them in words. He looks as though you're doing it for him. The imhu davar, but if it's something, the e boy leila suke adaisei she'eino oisa bishvelo, if it wasn't reasonable, they shouldn't have been thinking that it was done for them. Umata atzmo, and they really mislead themselves, shesove, because they think she'oisa bishvelo lichvado, that they're doing it for them, for their own honor. Kagoin shebaga b'chaveru b'derech. Now you see where he gets this from. You meet a friend on the road. And the friend thinks sheyatza likrato lechabdo, that you came out to greet them. Then you don't have to tell them. So it's that kind of fine line. What's kind of reasonable to think? So when I asked the dayanim, do I have to give a list of all the things wrong with my car? So what did they say to me? They said, if you sell it to a car dealership, then you don't have to tell them anything. What, you know more about cars than them? It's not reasonable that you're fooling them. Oh, they're not going to realize that you have to check. That's their job. They know that. So when you're selling it to a car dealership, you say, here's the keys, take you for a drive, and tell me what you think you want to give me. But if you're selling it to someone down the road who doesn't know anything about cars, then of course you have to tell them. Or at the very least, you have to say, I'm not going to sell it to you till you get it checked out by a dealership, by an expert, so that they can tell you everything that's wrong with it. Maybe there's more wrong with it that you don't even know about. That's okay. But to just say, yeah, it as seen, you know, caveat emptor. In English law, there used to be a principle, as some kosher lawyers here, so I have to be careful what I say. But in English law, in property law, in common law, there used to be a principle of caveat emptor, that the buyer should beware. Meaning, if you see it, and you didn't ask me, and it's got something wrong with it, then that's not my problem, it's your problem. Now, there's a difference between patent defects and latent defects. I'm not getting into this in more detail, because I used to be a lawyer, and I'm going to have to charge you if I start giving you legal advice.
Even today,
there's a certain...
Everybody knows you take it to be checked
okay.
out.
Okay, so that you may say that everybody knows now you get it checked out. But I don't know, maybe people don't know. Maybe you said it to a nice, sweet person down the road, they had no clue, to a kid that doesn't know. I don't know. I don't know if everybody knows these things. But even in law now, it's not so straightforward, a caveat emptor. But in halacha, caveat emptor doesn't work. You can't just say, the buyer beware. You have to ask, is it reasonable for them to have asked this question? So, for example, you're selling fake trainers, sneakers, whatever you want to call them. Nike. Yeah? Out of the back of a van.
N-I-C-E, yes.
Yes, N-I...
C-E as opposed to K-E.
No, well, okay, you're selling Nike, N-I-K-E, and it's false, and they're fake. Okay? So, how much does a pair of Nike sneakers cost now? I don't even know.
$600.
$600?
Shekels.
Oh, shekels. Okay, you've been in Israel a long time. Okay, fine. Okay, so let's say $200. So you're selling fake Nike sneakers, which is a problem, by the way, between you and Nike. You're ripping off their brand, and there's a copyright issue, and leaving that aside. but you're selling them as a knockdown price for, you know, $100, half price. Real Nike sneakers for $100. So what are you doing wrong here, apart from between you and Nike? So the buyer comes and he buys a sneaker which is worth $100 and he pays $100. So you're not stealing his money because you're paying the amount that these sneakers are probably worth. But he thinks that he's buying Nike sneakers, so this can never start. He thinks he's got a deal. Oh, it's a great deal. Now, if you were selling Nike sneakers for $5 a pair out of the back of a van, and he goes and says, oh, wow, this is the deal of the century. I bought 18 pairs of sneakers, and they're only $5 each, and they're real Nike sneakers. Really? Really? You thought they were real Nike sneakers, and they were $5? $100, maybe, you know, it's a discount brand. But $5? I'm not sure that's Geneva Stas. Because, you know, any reasonable person would have realized that these are cheap knockoff. You know, Rolex watches in Hong Kong for $3 each. Oh, so I bought a Rolex watch. My kids once bought a Rolex watch by a family member who went to Hong Kong. And they brought this Rolex. My kid was in Israeli school, you know, in a Datinami school. He was about 12. And he said, how can I go to school wearing a Rolex watch? Yeah, but I said, you know, it's only worth like $3. It's not a real Rolex watch. He knew. He said, but still, I'm not going to school wearing it. Interesting, he had a sensitivity that he didn't want to go to school wearing. I think within 3 days it fell apart anyway. So it was not really a shiner. Not really a shiner. Have a look in 14 and 15, and then we'll finish with some other sources. The Rambam says, number 14, you're not allowed to present yourself with sneaky language, misleading people. Don't have different things in your mind, different things in your heart. You have to be straight out. Like, say it how it is. You have to be honest and authentic and not a hypocrite, etc. What's going on in your mind should be what's going on in your mouth. Now, obviously, he's not saying you can't have a filter. You don't have to say exactly what you think all the time. That's, you know, socially not correct, but meaning you mustn't be misleading people. It doesn't matter whether they're Jewish or non-Jewish, because this is actually immoral. And number 15 as well, says, Adam, you're not allowed to fool people, the in business, or mislead them, he keeps stressing, doesn't matter if they're Jewish, if they're not Jewish, they're completely equal in the way you deal with them. If you know there's a deep effect in what you're selling, your deal, you must tell them, the purchaser, even just in words, it's awesome. And this goes further, go to page 3 for a second. Even in areas which are beyond Mekach or Memkah, let's look at these examples in 17 and 18. Kiyotseba, similarly, Rotseach, an accidental murderer, says the Mishnah, Shegala le'ir miklat, who has to go to an Ir Miklat because the person committed a homicide negligently but not on purpose. Obviously, if somebody did something completely, you know, it was honest, they had no idea this was going to happen, they stepped on the pavement and something flew into the road, God forbid, they don't have to go to an Ir Miklat. But someone who was negligent, who wasn't taking care, and they have to go to an Ir Miklat, and it's a Rav. V'ratzu anshei ha'ir l'chavdoi. And all the people in the city come out to give him cover. They think, well, you know, visiting rabbi. The people, the murderers also need to have shiurim. So he's coming to give shiurim. But he's not coming to give shiurim. He's coming because he's one of them. He's a rotzeach. So yom alahem, he has to say to them, rotzeach ani. I'm not coming here to give shiurim. No, I'm not fooling you. I'm a rotzeach. I'm coming here because I have to. I'm alone. If they say to him, okay, we're all roitzchim here, we don't hold it against you, then you cover him, then he can take the covert. But he has to be upfront with them. So too, Yerushalmi, number 8, Baranash detani chada michla, for who azila asar, a person who's learned one, let's say, masechta, one area, the inam moikrin line, they want to give him covered, begin trei tarati, and they think he's learned two. Yeah, he's done smicha in this, this, and this, and they say, oh, well, you know, we hear that you're a dayan, and you've done smicha in everything. No, Meimalan, you have to say to them, Ana chad michla ana chacham. I am only a chacham in what I am a chacham. Meaning he can tell them he knows less, that's fine. But he can't let them think that he knows more than he really knows. That's actually Geneva's das. I had a very interesting situation when I was, I don't think I mentioned this in the last time I gave the share. When I was living in London, I used to give shirim all over the place when I was a lawyer. But I hadn't really sat and done Smicha. I hadn't really sat in Kollel for, you know, when we came to Israel. I was able, Baruch Hashem, to sit for 5 years and learn properly in full. So I went to Rabbi Tatz. And I asked him, I would know Rabbi Tatz very well then. I was in a chabur of his. And I said to him, look, you know, do I really need to go and learn for 5 years? I give shiurim now. And people like them. And people come to them. And is there a problem with that? Do I really need to give, you know? So he looked at me and he said, yeah, there is a problem because you're a fraud. He said that quite clearly to me. He says, you're a fraud and you don't really know that much more than them. You're just one step ahead of them. And they, if you're giving a shiur, you're meant to be someone who they think knows how to give a shiur. You don't really know how to give a shiur. You know how to give a shiur that they like, but that's not how to give a shiur, which is true. So he says, of course you've got to go and sit and learn. I think I maybe told you the story of when I was called by Dan Lopian. Dan Gershon Lopian in London, who Zecher Tzadik Livracha, who's a very special guy and a special person. He called me up when I was a lawyer. He knew I was giving shiurim around, and he asked me, you know, I'd like you to be the scholar of residence in my shul in a few weeks on Shabbos. I remember the conversation as if it was yesterday, and I said to him, Dan, I think you've got the wrong number. So he said, oh, is this 203-1606? You know. So I said yes. He said yes, I've got the right number. I want to speak to you. So I said to him, you want me to come and give you a scholar in residence? I said, Dan Lopian, I'll be quite honest with you. I said to him, I'm really a total Am Haaretz. So he said to me, oh yes, I know you are. He said it exactly. He said, I know you are. I said, well, forgive me, but why do you want me to be the scholar in residence? He said, listen, the people in my shul are even bigger Am Haaretzim than you are. When I give them a shiur, they hear me and they think, oh, he's a rav, he gives a shiur, shkoyach. Of course he's a rav, he learned for decades. But if you give them a shiur and they say, well, if an Amorites like that can give a shiur, maybe I can give a shiur, maybe I can learn a bit, maybe it'll be an opportunity for them to learn a bit more. That's why I want you to come to my shul for Shabbos. And I did. It was a great Shabbos. It was a great Shabbos. We all had a very good time. And it was really, it made a big impression on me. And really it was, and there was no Gneva Stas. Certainly not for Dan Lopian. He knew exactly who I was and what I was able to do. Excuse me. But let's just finish off a few more sources. Why is this such a problem? Let's finish with two sources and then I'll show you what I've got in terms of examples. Because why stealing somebody's mind worse than stealing somebody's money? And it's really quite clear in the sense that when Adam HaRishon was created, it says that he was at the end of pasuk number 21, Vayihi Adam a nefesh chaya. He became a nefesh chaya. That was what a true person is. And quite famously, Unklus in number 22 translates nefesh chaya as ruach memalala, a speaking being. What differentiates humans from animals is our ability to speak and communicate ideas. And this is a little bit what we were talking about last week as well. If I steal somebody's wallet, then I've stolen something and it's bad, but it's something external to them. I've stolen their money and they're upset when they have to give it back. But if I get myself into somebody's mind by saying words which are lies and incorrect, I've stolen something much more personal and intimate than their wallet. I've stolen their mind and their understanding. I've taken something away from them that is very, very much more them, their essence as a human being. I've misused that. I've spoken in a way which is which is false and misleading. And therefore, that's one of the reasons why speech can be actually worse geneva in many ways than stealing money. Now, I brought you at the end, I'm not going to go through them all now, some of these questions that, you know, come up in geneva stars. They're not all problems. They're not all halakhically prohibited. Excuse me. But they all raise questions, cheating on tests. People don't always think about that. two guys came up to me at the airport a couple of weeks ago when I was coming back from America. And they said to me, have you bought any whiskey? Yeshivish guys, have you bought any whiskey yet? And I said, like, no. I never met these guys before. They say, oh, great. Because there's a deal in this whiskey shop, but they only allow you one bottle per boarding card. And we've both bought a bottle, so we can't get a third one. I said, you know, they said, can you come in and we use your boarding card and we'll buy a third one for us? I said, why would that be mutter? Why would that be allowed? Aren't you stealing from these people and misleading them? And you know, he's not stealing their money because he's paying the right amount of money for the whiskey, But it's clearly Geneva status. You're making out that you didn't buy the and it's Osa. So first of all, one of them looks at me and can't understand a word I'm talking about. and the other one looks at me and said, yeah, but in other airports it's okay. I'm not sure I believe that anyway. So I said to him, you know something? Let's do this. Let's all three of us go to the duty-free shop and ask them if it's okay. And say, I'm a completely random person you just met in the airport, and you want to use my boarding card to get another bottle of whiskey. Are they okay with that? And if they're okay with that, then I'm fine with that. So they said, no, we don't want to do that. Okay? But I feel bad for them. They picked the wrong guy, you know, really, to get to go. But I'll finish with a story I heard once from a Rav Israel Tauber, and this is just for a minute, which I think is a fantastic story. Rabbi Tauber passed away a few years ago. He was a Hasidish Rav, a Talmid Chacham, a Magid Shir. He was also a businessman, as many Hasidish Rabbonim are. And he said he heard this story when he talked to a person. There was a young man who was becoming more religious, and he went to these lunchtime shiurim. In like I used to go to in London, and he listened to the rabbonim. So a rav said to him, so young property dealer. The rav said he gave a shir on Geneva Das, and he said if you sell anything which has a defect, you have to inform the purchasers. So the young fellow came up to him afterwards and says, Rabbi, is this really halacha? I have to do this? He goes, yes, you have to do this. He says, yeah, but you know, in English law, you know, if they don't ask, you don't have to tell them. Or in America, wherever it was, probably America. He says, yeah, but look, you know, this is not English law here. You have an obligation to tell them if there's a defect. He goes, listen, Rabbi, you're going to cost me a lot of money here. It's all very well being religious, but this is going to start costing money. Because I am a property dealer, and I bought a property many years ago, and it has a crack in the basement, and it floods on a regular basis. And it was a bad deal, and I've been trying to get rid of this property for years. And every time I try and sell it, somebody asks in representations, please confirm, are there or are there not any floods, cracks, da 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 da. And I have to tell them, because I'm not a liar, and they pull out. Finally, somebody exchanged contracts with me. They never asked. I never said, I didn't have to say, they never asked, I finally got rid of the property. Are you telling me I have to tell them? Says the rabbi, you have to tell them. I'm sorry, you have to tell them. You can find the right time to tell them, but you have to tell them. So this is what he did. At the closing meeting, they're all sitting there with the mahogany tables exchanging, you know, signing things. So as they're about to sign the final thing, so the lawyer for the seller stands up and says, before we finish the deal, my client would like to hand over this memorandum. So the purchaser's saying, like, okay, what's this? So he reads it, and it says, I wish to inform you that there is a crack in the basement, and it floods on a regular basis. And I wish you to buy the property in full knowledge of this information. So the purchaser says to him, what's this? He says, well, you can read. It is what it is. He says, why are you telling me this? You don't have to tell me this. He says, listen, I'm an Orthodox Jew. I try very hard to do the right thing. And we have a thing called Geneva Das. And I want to do the right thing. I don't want you to buy it without knowing that. He goes, okay, talks to his lawyer for 5 minutes. He comes back. He says, if you're such an Orthodox Jew, why didn't you tell me this before we exchanged contracts? So he says, well, it's funny because I didn't actually know this law. And I went to a learning session with a rabbi. And the rabbi gave a class on it. And now I know it. And I didn't know it then. So he goes back to his lawyer, and he comes back 5 minutes later, and he says, listen, I know what's going on here. You Jews are all the same. You found somebody who's offered you more money for this property, and you're trying to get me to pull out of the deal. He says, I'm not falling for that nonsense. So he signs, you know, crack in the basement, leave me alone. So he signs on the deal, bought it. Now, I can't guarantee that you'll always have a happy ending, you know. But Rabbi Tauber told the story, and I believe it to be true. And actually, I heard someone else who verified it as well. They knew something about it too. But anyway, it gives you an example of how it might work in. Yes, sorry, Miriam, yeah.
Geneva, is it also, you're sitting talking to people and you give over something that you learned from a share, but without saying who gave it, so they leave them with an impression.
Or that you thought of it?
That either that I thought of it and much cleverer than I really am, and that they go away thinking, well, you know, wow, I didn't really.
I'm not sure. Maybe. Maybe in your case they're going to think that. Yeah. But in most people's cases, I don't think they're going to think that.
Isn't that why you have to give over the name of the person?
It's better to give over the name of the person. But the Rambam says already, if the person who said the thing, the Torah that you're giving over, is going to upset them. Yeah, they're a big anti-Zionist, and then you go, Torah in the name of Rav Kook? He says, you don't have to say it in the name and get them all upset. Just say over the Torah. Yeah.
My son showed me a little safer, but it had a race with a thing on it. This is that Matisyahu Polanski. I said, what is this? He says, it's Rav. I said, Mati, you don't have smicha. He says, everybody is a Rav.
Okay, so if everybody knows, then everybody knows.
So I said to Mati, if you're going to be a Rebbe, you're going to get smicha. So in my school, he is now Rabbi.
Oh, that's what a clever mother says to a clever son. Okay, let's leave it there.
He's got one more over here.
Okay.